That's, you know what? Puppies know how to break the, tension. But to share with us the story that happened between me finding out and me feeling the ground shake is somebody who lived a whole lot closer to it than I did. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor and privilege today to bring you the author of Running with Roselle and Thunder Dog, world-renowned speaker and leader, Michael Hingson.
Don't you make me cry.
Why?
Because I said so. Oh.
Here we are. I was told I can't make her cry. Well, I want to start by saying that anybody who refuses wine is a door prize. If that's because you don't drink, we all really feel sorry for you, because we know that when you wake up in the morning, that's as good as you're going to feel for the rest of the day. That's an old Dean Martin joke. Anyway, thank you all. And I want to start by thanking Kevin for putting this on. Kevin Worley has been a great friend, continues to be a great friend, but more important than that, he is really the person who is setting the trend for this. And so, Kevin, we really do appreciate you and what you're doing in this whole seminar. So, you know, it's interesting to talk about September 11th, and also for me, it's kind of important to put it in perspective of talking about guide dogs and canes, for that matter. I want to start by saying that anyone who truly understands blindness and thinks about it a lot recognizes that we have to continue to work hard to change societal attitudes. One of the things I hear a lot is the whole discussion of people call us visually impaired. And as I had a chance to talk yesterday with the class here at the center, we are not visually impaired at all. Visually, we're not, because the last time I checked, you don't necessarily look different simply because you're blind. Visually is an inaccurate way to put it. Impaired? Impaired to what? You know, just because we don't see, let's talk about all those blind impaired people who do see. You know, the bottom line is that we're not impaired. So I am really very pointedly trying to say we need to help change the vocabulary. Blind and low vision is a lot more appropriate. It's not equating to anything. And we need to get out of the habit of saying blind or visually impaired. Teachers of the visually impaired. No, they're not. They may be teachers of low vision people, but in reality, most all of us are truly, or ought to consider ourselves truly, blind, because we learn the techniques that blind people use and that help all of us function better. Those can include a guide dog. Now, a guide dog is not an animal that leads us around, or shouldn't. And a guide dog is an animal that guides, that makes sure that we walk safely. When I went to work in the World Trade Center, I learned early on that one of the things that I had to do, being the leader of an office, was to be able to function like any leader of an office. And that meant I needed to do what all of my blind impaired colleagues had to do. That is, they could read the signs to find the restaurant. They could read the signs to find the entrance to Solomon Brothers, later Solomon Smith Barney, or Morgan Stanley, or even one of my favorite places, the White Linen, or not White Linen, but Estee Lauder second shop on the 46th floor of Tower 2 of the World Trade Center, because my wife liked white linen. And so, yeah, it's a great place, got good prices. But the point is that I had to be able to do what anyone else would do. The difference is I had to do it in a different way. I didn't read signs. Still don't. Don't believe in them. It's against my religion to read signs. What I needed to know was how to get there, where it was. I needed to have that information solid in my head. And I spent a lot of time at first with a cane and then with a guide dog, learning the World Trade Center, learning all the rules, regulations, learning all the procedures, including dealing with emergencies, fire hazards, and so on. I did that using a cane because what a guide dog often will do is go around things that it can. And I wanted to know about all the things that my dog might normally just go around. So I started by working with a cane. And I believe that the best guide dog users are also good cane travelers and learn to be, which doesn't mean anything against a guide dog. It means that you are using every tool at your disposal to make sure that you are totally aware of your surroundings and should be. So I worked really hard to learn all about the World Trade Center. I love to tell people, eventually, you could drug me and drop me off anywhere in the World Trade Center. And when I woke up within 5 seconds, I'd know where I was. And that was true because I spent the time learning that. I spent the time learning emergency evacuation procedures and all about that. Because as the leader of an office, if we ever had an emergency, I knew that my employees and any guests who were in our office weren't going to know what to do unless they could read the signs. And they might not be able to read the signs depending on how much smoke there was, or for my light dependent people, friends, if there were a power failure and suddenly you couldn't see the lights. One of the things I told the class yesterday is the reality that we need to face is that every person on this planet has a disability. For most people, it's light dependence. You can see until the lights go out. And then what do? You grab for a smartphone or a flashlight, because Thomas Edison invented the electric light bulb as a reasonable accommodation for light dependent people who can't get around in the dark. It doesn't change the fact that they have as much a disability as I. The only difference is that technology has mostly covered it up. Technology makes it really easy to have access to light. That's fine, no problem. But don't diminish me just because I don't use that. And that's what we've got to start teaching people a lot more than they understand today. So for me, I spent a lot of time learning these things so that when I was in the World Trade Center, it wasn't a matter of speculation. It was a matter of knowledge as to what to do if we ever had any kind of an emergency. And so I knew all of that. I didn't realize that that was creating a mindset in my own mind about what to do in the case of an emergency and that I could do it calmly. But that mindset kicked in, as Marianne discussed, when the plane hit Tower One, the first tower hit, the building literally tipped. Tall buildings like that are actually big springs. They have expansion joints. They're made to tip and flex in windstorms, or even if they're hit by an airplane. A military aircraft hit the Empire State Building in the 1940s because it was lost in a fog bank. The building swayed because they're tall, they're flexible. Literally, picture a tall building as a big spring. And if it needs to flex, it does. And then it comes back vertical again, unless you really bend the spring too far. But that didn't happen even on September 11th. What happened on September 11th, of course, was that airplanes hit the buildings, but the planes were filled with 26,000 pounds, 13 tons of jet fuel. And that explosion of jet fuel destroyed the infrastructure much more than the plane hitting the building. And that's what caused both towers to collapse. Anyway, our building tipped probably about 20 feet. And then it came back. And almost immediately, as soon as it came back, I went back into my office. I went to the door as soon as the building started to move. The door between my office and our reception area. I grew up in Palmdale, California, where we had earthquakes all the time. Building moves, go stand in doorway. Yeah, that works when you're 78 floors up. But, you know, nevertheless, that's what I did. And then when the building became vertical, I went in and I met Roselle, my fifth guide dog, coming out from under my desk. I took her leash. I said heel, which meant to come around on my left side, as we all know, and sit, which she did. About that time, the building dropped straight down about 6 feet because the expansion joints went back to their normal configuration. That's all that happened. My colleague who was in our corporate office that day, because we were doing sales training seminars for our reseller partners. So David Frank from our corporate office in California had come back. He looked out the window and started shouting, "Oh my God, Mike, there's fire and smoke above us. There are millions of pieces of burning paper. We got to get out of here right now. We can't stay here. We got to get out of here." And I said, "Slow down, David. No, we got to get out of here right now." We had guests in. They started to scream. They were in our conference room eating breakfast, but they started moving toward the exits. Then they heard me say, "Slow down." And they waited to see what was going to happen. And David kept saying, "I see fire and smoke above us. And there are millions of pieces of burning paper falling outside our window." I could hear things brushing against the side of the building. And now I knew what it was. Millions of pieces of burning paper falling outside the window. And I understood that. And that was fine. But the problem was something different. Finally, David said what I call the big line. "You don't understand. You can't see it." Of course, the big line. The problem wasn't what I didn't see and didn't understand. The problem was what David wasn't seeing and as a result didn't understand. I had a dog sitting next to me wagging her tail. Normally, if there are thunderstorms, Roselle is deathly afraid. She shakes, she shivers, and so on. She wasn't doing anything except kind of yawning and wagging her tail and looking around going, "Who woke me up? I was sleeping really well. And you know, whoever you are, I'm not happy with you." She just sat there and yawned and all that. And that told me that whatever was going on wasn't such an urgency situation that we had to panic to run away. And so the result was that I finally got David to focus. And I said, "Get our guests to the stairs. You said you saw fire, so don't let them in any way take elevators," because I knew that the central core of the World Trade Center was where all the elevators were. And if there was fire in the building, it could get into the elevator shafts, which it did. Now, we didn't know what happened. Of course, people tell me all the time, "Well, of course, you didn't know, you couldn't see it." Dumb sighted people. The problem wasn't that at all. As I said to people, the last time I checked, X-ray vision and Superman are fictitious. The bottom line is the airplane struck 18 floors above us on the other side of the building. No one knew what happened. None of us in my office or anywhere around us knew. There was no way to know because X-ray vision and Superman don't really exist. Fictitious. Anyway, those are the same people who say guide dogs don't guide blind people. They lead them around, which is just as bad. We'll come to that. But the bottom line is that I didn't know, no one knew, but I told David to get our guests to the stairs. He did. While he was doing that, I called my wife, Karen, who also, by the way, happened to be a person with a disability. She just passed away this past November after 40 years of marriage, but you know, she was in a wheelchair. So I love to say she read, I pushed, worked out really well. And so Karen at 8:47 in the morning had no clue what had happened where our home was in New Jersey. Good Morning America didn't have it on the news yet. It was like within 2 minutes of the time the plane hit. I love to say I scooped Charlie Gibson by 8 minutes and get no credit for it. So, you know, but I called Karen and said there was an explosion or something. We don't know, and we're going to leave. And she said, "Well, what else is going on?" And I said, "I don't know anymore. I'll call you when I can," and got off the phone. David came back. We took one more walk through the office, and then we went to the stairs and started down. And almost immediately, I began smelling an odor, and the odor I smelled were the fumes from burning jet fuel. It took me about 4 floors to realize it because I never expected to smell that in the World Trade Center. And so when I finally realized it, I said to other people around me, "You know, this odor, I think are the fumes from burning jet fuel." And other people said, "Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, we couldn't figure it out, but that's what it is. We must have been hit by an airplane." That's all we knew. And again, we assumed it because of the fumes, but we didn't know. No one was telling us. No one knew. And all the way down the stairs, I'll tell you right now, no one knew. And no one who did know told us. I'll get to that. About 10 floors down, suddenly a woman right behind me on the stairs stopped and she said, "I can't go on. I can't breathe. We're not going to make it out of here." And I just turned around and Roselle started giving her some kisses. And I said, "Come on, you can do it." And other people surrounded her. And we had a group hug right there on the stairs. And they told her, "Come on, you can do this. Let's just keep going. We're all in this together." And she was able to keep going down the stairs. We knew we had to help each other. We knew we had to form a team. We knew we didn't dare allow panic to start on the stairs. And that's what happened all the way down. A couple of times people passed us who were helping people who were very badly burned. You know, we heard somebody yell from above us, "Burn victim coming through, move to the side." And we did. The stairs were wide enough that you could walk like two or three abreast. So we would move to the side and let these people by who were surrounding people who were very badly burned. At about the 50th floor, David, my friend, suddenly, who hit, and David had stopped really saying much. And then suddenly he said, "Mike, we're going to die. We're not going to make it out of here." And I just said to him, "Stop it, David. If Roselle and I can go down these stairs, so can you." When I was at college, I took not only the courses to get a master's degree in physics, but I also got a secondary teaching credential. And one of the courses I took was that secret voice that teachers never tell you about, Voice 101, how to yell at students. Came in handy with David, I'm just saying. David told me later that that brought him out of his funk when I snapped at him, and I was very deliberate about doing it. What David said is, "I got to get my mind on something so I don't worry about this. I'm going to walk a floor below you and tell you what I see on the stairs, okay?" And I just said, okay, I didn't need him to. It wasn't going to make a difference. But still, if it would help, then that's what we did. So David walked away and he went down the stairs and I got to the 49th floor and suddenly I heard, "Hey, I'm at the 48th floor, Mike. All's good here, going on down." And that happened all the way down. 47th floor, all good. A little bit later, 44th floor, this is where the Port Authority cafeteria is. Not stopping, going on down. I think it's one of the most incredible things that happened that day. Why? Because every time David spoke, anyone, had to be thousands of people, within the sound of his voice, heard someone saying on the stairs, "I'm okay." And he had to have helped lots of people remain focused and calm, even though I don't think he really thought about it. And he doesn't get the visibility and recognition that he should for doing that. I know people tell me they followed me down the stairs. A woman I met in Kansas City at a speech once came up to me and she said, "You know, when you got to about the 54th floor, we just opened the door and we're coming on the stairs when you were going by saying, 'Good girl, Roselle, what a good dog.' And you were really calm going down the stairs. We just followed you down the stairs because we knew if you were going to be okay, we were going to be okay." And that's exactly what she did and what she said. And others have said that as well. And I just kept praising Roselle going down the stairs, because one of the things that is a very important thing for all of us as guide dog users to recognize is we have to not be stressed around our dogs ever. If we start getting worried, if we become stressed, if we're stressed and uptight, they're going to take on that characteristic. I have seen it so many times. Even in the worst situations, we have to be calm for the dogs. It also helps us, because the more we're calm and the more they respond by being calm, the more calm we will be. It's not mutually exclusive. It's an interdependence that is absolutely there. And the more we focus, the more they can focus, and the less stress they have on their lives, and the longer they will live. So in the World Trade Center going down, I kept saying, "Good dog, Roselle, what a good girl." And she kept guiding. What that also taught me and told me was, if suddenly she started reacting in a way that I didn't expect, then I would know, well, maybe she's sensing something and I need to be alert for it. Not stressed, but alert for it. And so I worked for that and did so by keeping her focused and calm. And she just walked down the stairs like a trooper all the way down to the bottom without any difficulty, because she knew that I was looking out for her. As Cesar Milano would say, I'm supposed to be the pack leader of the team, and I have to act like it by reinforcing and encouraging positive behavior by my teammate. And by doing so, my teammate can do her job. Now it's Alamo, his job. And the result is that we are better for it. So I'm telling anyone who gets a guide dog, who has a guide dog, don't let yourself get stressed in front of your dog. Don't do it. You don't need to do it. The more you encourage the dog, the more you promote positive and calm behavior, the better it will be. Because these dogs work so hard. anyone who is a trainer at a guide dog school, any of the people here from any of the guide dog schools who deal with this professionally will tell you that guiding is a very stressful job. They take it very seriously. They want to please. And we need to let them know that they're doing a good job. If they don't behave, figure it out and correct it, but especially promote the good stuff and keep the stress down. We have to model that. So I kept telling Roselle, what a good girl, all the way down the stairs. We got to about the 35th floor and people were sort of not talking very much. And I realized, oh gosh, are they going to start behaving like David? I said, I got to do something about this. And it just came to me. I said, now everyone listen up. My name is Mike. I am blind. I got my guide dog Roselle here. If we lose power and lighting on the stairs, don't anybody worry. We're offering a half price special to get you out today only. And that's exactly the reaction I wanted. I wanted people to laugh, and they did. And then a couple floors later, I did it again. I said, hey, you know what? They're not going to allow us back in the building right away. You know, we've seen fire. We know there's fire and all that stuff. When they allow us back, let's all meet on the 78th floor at 8:45 in the morning, and let's all walk down the stairs together. What a great way to lose weight, huh? You know, and again, it was all about getting people to laugh and trying to keep people focused. So the result was that we kept going down. And David finally, hey, I'm at the 30th floor and I see firefighters coming up the stairs. They got big, heavy packs on their backs. They may be carrying 100 pounds of stuff. Well, it was like about 60 or 70 pounds, but they had stuff on their backs. And they said, and David said, you know, they're coming up the stairs. The first one came up to me, stops right in front of me. And he goes, hey, buddy, you okay? You know how those guys talk back there, you know. You know, those New York, New Jersey guys. And I said, yeah, I'm fine. Well, that's really nice. We're going to send somebody down the stairs, Wichita, to make sure you get up. Wichita, W-I-T-Y-A, Wichita. And I said, you don't need to do that. I'm fine. I do this. I'm very capable on stairs. Oh, we're going to send somebody with you anyway. And I said, look, you don't need to do that. And I'll tell you why I'm resisting in a minute. And, you know, he said, look, we're going to send somebody. I said, you don't need to do that. I'm blind, but I got my guide dog. We're doing really well. And he goes, that's a nice dog. And he starts petting Roselle. And it wasn't the time to give him the lecture about don't pet a guide dog in harness. It also wasn't the time to give him a lecture about blindness isn't the problem. It's really your attitude. I didn't want somebody grabbing my arm and lifting me up when they're going to try to make sure I go down the stairs without falling. But that wasn't the real reason I resisted. I knew what these people were doing. Remember, I talked to all the emergency preparedness people. I knew they had to carry all their equipment up to fight the fires. Why? Let's say there was a fire on the 80th floor of the World Trade Center. Well, there was in Tower 2. And let's say that they have stored equipment on the 81st floor. They can't get to it. You got to carry the equipment up with you, all the floors to the fire. And that's what they were all doing. I didn't want to take any firefighter out of their team's position. I didn't want someone to have to pass off their equipment. I didn't want to hear later on the news how maybe somebody got hurt because one of their teammates were helping a blind person go down the stairs. How's that going to look? And what kind of societal attitude does that promote? So finally, I just used, as I called it before, the big card. I said, look, I got my friend over here, David, who can see, and he and I are going down the stairs together. And the fire guy turns to him and he goes, you're with him. And David goes, yeah, leave him alone. He's fine. Okay, then we're going up the stairs. And he gave Roselle a few more pets and he walked up the stairs. Roselle gave him a few more kisses. Very possibly that was the last unconditional love he ever got in his life. It was all about, though, keeping the teams together. And that was important to do. I don't know that he or any of his colleagues perished. They may have come back down. I don't know. But I do know that I wanted to give them the best possible opportunity to deal with what was occurring. So we went on down the stairs. David assumed his position a floor below us and finally got down to the first floor, and we got out into the lobby of One World Trade, and suddenly we heard people shouting on bullhorns, go this way, no, don't go outside, don't go out those doors, come this way, go into the central part of the complex, no, don't go over there, come this way. And they were doing that. We didn't know it at the time, but because people were jumping outside where they would have gone. We didn't know that at the time. Anyway, so This guy comes up to David and me and he goes, "Hey, I'm with the FBI. I'll get you where you need to go." And of course, I was thinking to myself, "I didn't do it, copper. You can't pin me that rap on." I have a morbid sense of humor. What can I say? I didn't say that to him. But what I did say is, "What's going on?" And he said, "No time to tell you." I wish he had. Do you get the impression that I like information and I'm not going to panic necessarily at all if I know? But he didn't know me, so I can appreciate why he didn't tell us. But I would rather have known. Maybe it would have made a difference in exactly where we went for a variety of reasons. So the whole world might have, for me, been different. But nevertheless, he didn't. But he took us where we needed to go, through the complex, inside, out through Tower 1, through the central arcade. Darn it, right past the Ben and Jerry's ice cream kiosk, which was empty. No time to get a scoop. I know, shucks. But finally, we went up an escalator across the whole complex from Tower 1, right past Borders Books and out into the sunshine. As soon as we got outside, David looked around and he said, "Mike, I see fire in Tower 2. And I went, "What?" He said, "Yeah, there's fire in Tower 2. We didn't know. We had no clue, because we didn't feel anything when we were in our little cave going down the stairs. All we knew was we were told to leave the area, so we walked over to Broadway, turn left on Broadway, now going north on Broadway on the west side of the street, so there was a building right to my left. And we walked up and finally got to Vesey Street, and we stopped, and David said, "I can see the fire really clearly in Tower 2 now." We were like maybe, 100 yards away. He said, "I want to take pictures." He got out his camera and started taking pictures. I got out my phone. I tried to call my wife, Karen. Couldn't get through. The circuits were busy, as we now know, because people were saying goodbye to loved ones. And then as I had just put my phone away and David was putting his camera away, when a police officer yelled, "Get the hell out of here. It's coming down now." And I heard this rumble that became this deafening kind of roar. I described the sound as kind of a combination of a freight train and a waterfall. You could hear glass breaking, metal clattering, and then this white noise of Tower 2 collapsing like 100 yards away from us. Remember, it's 400 yards tall, sports fans. So David turned and ran. He was gone. Everybody else was running and moving away. I literally lifted Roselle by the harness, turned her around, and started running back the way we came. And I'm going to tell you something. You can choose to believe this or not. Doesn't matter. Well, it does matter to me, but it's true. I started to run and immediately started thinking to myself, "God, I can't believe that you got us out of a building just to have one fall on us." And I heard in my head as clearly, and I'm saying this as clearly as you hear me now, a voice that said, "Don't worry about what you can't control. Focus on running with Roselle and the rest will take care of itself." And I had this sense that if we focused and did that, we'd be okay. And we ran. We got to the next street, Fulton Street, turned right, now going west on Fulton Street, building on my right, ran about 25 yards and suddenly caught up to David, who had realized that he had just run off without me and was going to come back. Well, look, come on. It was a panicky situation. I can understand David doing that. And he suddenly realized, "Oh my gosh, I left Mike. I'm going to go back." But before he could go back, I caught up with him and he apologized. And I said, "Don't worry, let's keep going, David." And so we continued to run. And he said, eventually, "You know, I'm really sorry." And again, I said, "No problem." And then we got engulfed in all the dust cloud, the dirt and debris and the fine particles of the collapse of Tower 2. David said it was so thick that he couldn't see his hands 6 inches in front of his face. I can tell you that the dirt and debris was so thick that with every breath I took, I could feel dust and stuff going down my throat and settling in my lungs. I don't know what it's like to be a smoker, but I'll tell you, I never want that feeling. So we kept running, knowing we had to get out of that, otherwise we would smother. So I started telling Roselle and giving her hand signals, "Right, right," because I was listening for an opening and hoping she would see one so we could get inside of that building that we were running next to. Yeah, Tower 2 was collapsing and all that, but we wanted to get out of that dust, more important than anything else. Suddenly I heard an opening, and Roselle must have known what I want. She turned right, she took one step, and she stopped and wouldn't move. Now, I want to stop for a second and say something. People ask me all the time, "Well, wasn't it better for you to have a guide dog in the World Trade Center than going down the stairs and all that with a cane?" No. There's no magic to going downstairs. I could have gone down those stairs with a cane just as easily as with a guide dog. I could have done most of the walking as easily with a cane as with a guide dog. But when we were running away from Tower 2, using a guide dog was for me a better situation and solution, because if I had a cane and had it out in front of me, people weren't going to be watching. They would have tripped over it, probably broke the cane, and they would have fallen and maybe they would have been trampled. That's the one time I would say that a guide dog was clearly an advantage. For me, it was always an advantage because we had the relationship and other things. But from a mobility standpoint alone, certainly running from the collapsing building was better with a guide dog. But anyway, Roselle stopped, as I said, and she wouldn't go on. She wouldn't move. Come on, Roselle, keep going. She wouldn't move. And I realized again, focus on running with Roselle and the rest will take care of itself. Oh my gosh, maybe she stopped for a reason. So I stuck out a hand and stuck out a foot and discovered we were at the top of a flight of stairs. Roselle was waiting for the right command, which is exactly forward. So before we did that, I gave her a big hug. And then I said, good girl, Roselle, forward. And she went down the stairs into the arcade entrance to the Fulton Street subway station. And to save a little bit of time, we were there and then went down with an employee from the subway system to a locker room where we stayed for a while till a police officer came and said, you need to leave the area now. It's clearer up above. And we followed him back up the stairs and got outside. And David looked around and said, oh, my God, Mike, there's no Tower 2 anymore. And I said, David, what do you see? And he said, all I see are pillars of smoke hundreds of feet tall. We just stood there a moment and then walked away going west on Fulton. Walked for about 10 minutes or so. Maybe 15 minutes. And then we were in this little plaza area when we heard that freight train waterfall sound again, and we figured it must be our tower. David looked back and he said, there's a very confined dust cloud coming our way. We moved to the side, hunkered down behind a small retaining wall. Everything passed us by and it stopped and the ground stopped shaking and the noise died down. And we stood up and David looked around and said, oh my God, Mike, there's no World Trade Center anymore. And I said, what do you mean? What do you see? And he said, all I see are fingers of fire and smoke, hundreds of feet tall, pillars of smoke, the towers, they're gone. We had come into that building like less than 3 hours before, and then in the blink of an eye, it was all gone. We came in just to do our jobs. We stood there a moment, and then I tried to call my wife, Karen, and this time I got through, and after tears on both sides of the phone, she told me how two aircraft had deliberately been hijacked and crashed into the towers, one into the Pentagon, and a fourth was still missing over Pennsylvania. And that is the first time we knew what happened. The bottom line, everyone, is you never know when you might be in an emergency situation. So when you are anywhere, especially anywhere where you're going to be for any length of time, make sure you know how to get out. Make sure you know where things are. At lunch, if you don't get a chance to do it beforehand, ask people where the exits are. Make sure you know all of that. But bottom line is, don't panic. With or without a dog, don't panic. Think about your actions. You can learn to control your fear. We're writing a third book. Marianne mentioned Thunder Dog and Running with Roselle. Thunder Dog, the story of a blind man, his guide dog, and the triumph of trust is available from Amazon and Audible. It's also available from that Bard place. But being a poor, starving author, we much prefer you to buy it from Audible. But, you know, Thunder Dog is available. Running with Roselle, I wrote for kids, but more adults buy it than kids. And it's more about Roselle's and my growing up and how we met and so on. I'm now writing a third book called A Guide Dog's Guide to Being Brave. That's the working title. And the point of the story is to start to teach people how to learn to control fear, how to learn not to let yourself be blinded, as I describe it, by fear, how to not let fear take over your lives when suddenly an unexpected thing happens. And I'm telling you, you can learn to do that. You can learn to be able to use fear as a powerful tool to keep you focused and motivated and able to do what you need to do, rather than being something that just takes over your lives and whatever happens. Focus on controlling what you can. Don't worry about the things you can't control. And there's so many things that we worry about that we have no control over. Forget them. You can't do anything about them. And you do have the power not to worry about them. Focus on the things that you have control over, like we did that day, Roselle and I walking down the stairs. If we were going down the stairs and suddenly the building started to collapse, Nothing we could do about it. Yeah, it wouldn't have lasted very long either, but we couldn't do anything about it. And so you focus on the things that you can. When the next day I started calling Guide Dogs for the Blind and talking about what happened, actually it was a couple of days later, I asked one of the trainers, you think any of this will affect Roselle? And one of the reasons I asked that was that when we got home that night, I let Roselle out of harness and off leash, and I was going to take her out. But before I could do that, Roselle was off like a shot to go to her toy box and grab her favorite Bodabone and started playing tug of war with our entire guide dog, Lenny. It was over for her. Well, when I talked to the trainers about it, they said, did anything threaten her? And I said, no. Did she get hit by anything or anything that would bother her? And I said, no. Then there's your answer. Dogs don't do what if. And we don't need to do what if all the time if it's going to take us into a stressful place. You can learn to control that. You can do what if and strategize, but don't let it create fear in your lives. And that's really, I think, the story of September 11th that I can tell. I do hope you'll get Thunderdog, whether you get it from Bard, but hopefully from Audible or whatever, or go to Bookshare, and they do have it in Braille there as well. But the reality is, I think having a guide dog is a wonderful thing. I like the companionship, and I like the fact that I have learned more about building teams and teaming relationships and teamwork from working with 8 guide dogs than I've ever learned from Tony Robbins, Ken Blanchard, and all them management experts. Because it's all practical. And the dogs, by the way, are honest. They're open to trust. Dogs love unconditionally, but they don't trust unconditionally. But the difference between a dog and a person is that a dog, unless they're incredibly traumatized by something that we do to them, dogs are open to trust. And because of that, they want to trust. And if we convey that we want to trust and develop a trusting relationship, it is something that's second to none. And so for all of you who are thinking about guide dogs, you'll learn a lot about it in the course of the day today. I'm here, we're all here to answer any questions that you have, but you will find that if you do it right, you can have a relationship that is just virtually unbeatable, and you'll have a friend for life. I think the funniest thing I got to tell you, when I had Roselle and we had retired my 4th guide dog, Lenny, because she got a kidney disease, when she stayed with us, Lenny wanted to continue to be a guide dog, and it became a real game when both dogs knew that I was going to be going somewhere. They would both run to try to be the first one in the harness. It was so funny. They knew what they were doing. But really, I can't say enough about the value of what a dog can bring to your life. But do it for the right reason. Do it because you learn and understand how much it can add to your mobility experience. But again, first make sure you know how to use a cane and know how to be aware of your surroundings. Don't let the guide dog be in the habit of going one way. That was a challenge around the World Trade Center, but we worked really hard to make sure that Roselle didn't get in the habit of going a particular way. And it was tough, but we did it. And so Roselle was always up for a command, not saying, I know how to get out of here, because she wouldn't have known. And the normal way we would have taken, by the way, wouldn't necessarily have worked. Thanks all. This has been fun. I'm around all day and want to help any way I can.